It's Brian, your lunatic friend. In my stories of Jesus and music, I'm at the turn of the century. Prince might have been partying like it was 1999, but I was coming to the end of the line with Mer Records. Nope, they're not renewing my contract. A lot of people were worrying about Y2K, and I was thinking, why stay here? Now, when you come to the end of a record contract and they're letting you go, record companies have their version of a memorial service. They release a greatest hits project to try to get as much out of their investment as they can. And for me, Mer Records would release Love Takes Time, 17 Timeless Classics. Love Takes Time was the biggest selling song I ever had, so it made a great title track for a new project of old songs. And I would do a photo shoot for it. The album cover is a picture of me in a shark skin suit, my hand on the pain in my neck. It was the easiest record I've ever done, because I was never in the studio for this one. They would hire a guy half my age to do a remix of the song, and they would make a duet out of it with Rebecca St. James, whom I never saw in the studio. She came in and sang, and they used my own vocal clips from the original song. Changed the whole groove underneath, too, just to make it more hip and trendy, because apparently now I am old school. And there wasn't much fanfare saying goodbye, considering there were 17 songs on there that were mostly number one singles in radio. And Love Takes Time was the only song of mine that ever got secular side radio airplay. It made the top 100, because they had a deal with Epic Records at the time. But of course, the song I Love You With My Life is still the biggest song I ever had. And they put it on here. It was a number one single in three different decades, and I still sing that most often. And right now, I'm looking at the song list from the back of the record because I had to go look it up. And what's interesting is that the third most downloaded song on iTunes of my songs is not on this record. It was probably too mellow for radio. The song is called Blessed Are the Tears. It's a song that gives you permission to grieve. And when I wrote the song, I was surprised that somebody wouldn't know how to cry. But then I hadn't done any of that because I wasn't even aware that I was reaching the pinnacle of my career. A declining career doesn't just stop. It's more like running out of gas in an airplane at 20,000 feet and you don't notice the decline, because when you're in a slipstream, you can coast for a long ways. But it wasn't just my record company that was going to be going away. My wife assured me that she wasn't going to stay. She was just waiting for the boys to get out of high school. But I was still moving too fast to grieve, and it was even harder to stay at home, knowing that a decision had already been made, even if you thought you might be able to stop it. So when Provident Music showed an interest in signing me to a new deal, I told them about the possible scenario in my home life. And they were understanding but honest that if you go through a divorce in Christian music, it's a marketing nightmare. And they didn't want to start a contract like that. But they agreed to do one record with me and then see how things were going. So about the same time they were releasing Timeless Classics, I was also writing a new record for Provident Music. But that will be on the next episode, because right now it's 1999, the year that I turned into a Timeless Classic. So let's look at the back of the cover and see what I did in the last 11 years. After the title track, there was Step by Step, After This Day Is Gone, When It Comes to Love, Blue Skies, Into My Heart, I Love You With My Life, Don't Look Away, We All Need, I'll Not Forget You, When I Turn to You, You Don't Leave Me Lonely, Things Are Gonna Change, and That's a Song, Not a Prophecy, Strolling on the Water, and Traces of Heaven, and finally A Heart Like Mine, and One Voice. And I didn't write that last song. That's where they could have put Blessed Are the Tears. But then I don't know that they were sad to see me go. Keep in mind here that it was 25 years ago that I was facing the loss of a contract and my first marriage. I might sound a little cavalier telling the story, but I would carry it in a quiet desperation. You would never know that I was heartsick. But I've always written songs because I have a hard time feeling things on the outside. At least I did back then, and people would often think that I was flippant. But growing up with my folks moving around the country all the time, almost every year and a half, at least early on, and I was used to being the new kid, walking to school by myself, learning how to talk to strangers was a way of life. And eventually I made a career out of it. And I think even as a married man, I felt and acted isolated. And I don't think I knew how to include her in what I was doing. But then I probably don't include the audience either. I started writing songs in high school for my own sanity. And over the years, it became more of a diary of my own faith, or at least a search for the truth, rather than a proclamation of what God was going to do for you, or an advertisement telling people how wonderful God is. It always seemed to me that the best songs were about how things feel. And I know that I feel a lot of things deeply. I just don't often know how to get them to the surface. And that's where music and melodies became a lifeline to me. At least it was good for me. It kept me out of a lot of depressions. But I still remember a lot of times where I'd be saying, this can't be happening to me. I'm a Christian artist. You know, like your kids getting busted for stealing stuff at the store, your wife doesn't like you anymore, and you still have awful thoughts. And sometimes you've been known to use cuss words, but you call it your golf language. But you try to keep it on on the down low, but then somebody hears you having an argument on the phone, and the next day you get a call from your manager, and he says the Billy Graham Association has canceled your gigs because somebody heard you use the word half-ass backstage, or that entire denomination that blackballed me because they thought I was making too much money. And yeah, there were probably plenty of reasons that I wasn't chosen to represent all of Christian music. I probably wouldn't have sounded humble enough in my acceptance speech, because I might have been too busy to be grateful for what God has given me. But I have believed in Jesus, and I followed him through some valleys that I thought were box canyons. Our purpose is to know him, and I do. And for almost a half a century, I know I was consistent in giving back to God what God gave to me. But at the same time, I'm a perfect demonstration of the grace of God, completely apart from performance. And there hasn't been one day where I have earned God's love or deserved his intervention. And personally, I think the people who win awards for their efforts are just the ones with the best managers. When we pass out awards, I always think about this one old hymn. I will cherish the old rugged cross till my trophies at last I lay down. I will cling to the old rugged cross and exchange it someday for a crown. And even then, a crown is something we will probably lay at Jesus' feet. But for now, I'm just your lunatic friend on the back row talking about Jesus and music from my perspective here at NutshellSermons.com, where you are never dismissed.